Hey friends, welcome back to Murder on the Map. I'm your host Taylor, and I'm really glad to be back here with you. I took some unplanned time off for work, vacation, and family time, but I'm back just in time for my favorite time of year, which is Halloween, but I'm sure a lot of you already knew that about me. Instead of covering one specific case in today's episode, I'm going to share a few stories of true crimes that have occurred on Halloween. I did this last year too, so I'll link my Halloween episode from then to in the show notes if you want to double feature it. I'll get into the stories right after the break. Halloween night 1981 in New York City was another excuse for people to wear costumes and pretend to be something that they weren't. But that night, someone would go from pretending to be scary to actually committing a double murder. Ronald Sisman had invited his girlfriend, Elizabeth Platzman, over to his place for a photo shoot. They were hanging out and enjoying wine when a group of masked people showed up at the front door. Ronald first told Elizabeth that they should just ignore them, but when the knocking turned to banging, he relented and opened the door. The bodies of 19-year-old Elizabeth and 39-year-old Ronald were found early Saturday morning at Ronald's duplex on West 22nd Street in Manhattan near Greenwich Village. He used it as his residence and the location of two of his photography business. The couple had been severely beaten before being shot in the back of their heads at close range, execution style. Either before or after the murders, the place had been ransacked by the killers. Furniture had been ripped and other items were torn apart, and it made it look like the killers were looking for something. There was so much chaos in the apartment that the investigators couldn't walk without stepping on something. Both Ronald and Elizabeth's faces and bodies were covered in an array of bruises. It's been speculated that the couples could have known the killer because there was no sign of forced entry. Among the missing items from the scene was a .25 caliber pistol that was registered to Ronald. It could have been the murder weapon used on the victims. The other items missing were the victim's driver's license. There had been some claims that Ronald had been involved in drugs, but nothing could be proven. If he was on drugs or involved in trafficking or dealing, the police might have been able to have a motive for the murders and search the residence. The drug angle originally came from Melanie Haller, an actress who had worked with Ronald, had accused him that he tried to force her to take drugs, and when she refused, he became belligerent. But the case was later dropped when Melanie declined to cooperate with the investigators. Still believing that drugs were involved, they wondered if Ronald could have owed a dealer money, but nothing would even make sense in that case because nothing was taken from his place except driver's licenses. Shortly after accusing Ronald, another accusation by Melanie surfaced. Melanie had also made an accusation against a film producer in Long Island. In that case, she had also said that he attempted to drug her, and those charges were also dropped because she wouldn't cooperate with investigators. The police then had an informant call him with a bizarre tale. He said that he knew of someone who had predicted the murder in weeks prior. The person in question that supposedly predicted the murder was David Berkowitz, the imprisoned son of Sam Killer. In case you don't know who Son of Sam is, David is currently serving a life sentence in prison for killing 6 victims and wounding 7 others. After his conviction, the rumors swirled that David didn't act alone or on his own accord, but that he was a puppet for a much larger satanic cult. The informant told the police that a couple weeks before the murder, David had told him that his cult was going to torture and perform a ritual killing on Halloween. He described it as a photographer's residence near Greenwich Village. After the ritual, they would kill the occupants and clean the residence of any incriminating evidence against the cult. David elaborated that Ronald had a snuff video of one of the Son of Sam killings that would shed light on the cult and make people rethink that David had acted alone. Ronald had been hired by the cult to record a video, but they hadn't told him what the film was about beforehand. So after it finished, Ronald didn't seem happy at all about what he had been a part of. The cult had heard rumors that Ronald was in trouble for dealing drugs and that he might use the video as leverage to get a deal. When the authorities contacted David, he was able to give a very accurate depiction of Ronald's residence, and even though those closest to Ronald said that he had never met David and wasn't involved in a satanic cult, the police still thought so. One fact from the scene that could go a long way in supporting David Berkowitz's claims that the cult killed them is in fact that their licenses were stolen. That happened in other cult killings where they take personal identifying objects to make sure that they got the right person. To this day, no one has been arrested for the murders. If you're listening to my show, I can only assume that you like spooky stuff or you're my mom. And hey mom, if you're listening, go ahead and tune this ad out. Anyway, I'm shopping at Caraz and they have the cutest spooky stuff tees. They also have some Southwestern tees. So if you love Arizona and out west, there's tees for you. And my personal favorite is the Brooks & Dunn Neon Moon shirt. And I have a promo code where you can get 10% off your first order. So if you're in the market for some new shirts and you want to look cute, which, I mean, come on, we all do, check out Caraz.com. That's Kaeraz.com and use code TaylorBTalks for 10% off your first order. Marvin Brandland and his wife Ethel had spent the evening handing out candy to trick-or-treaters. Their granddaughter Teresa had just left and they assumed that most kids were done for the night and started to do other things. When one last knock came, Ethel opened the door and saw an adult wearing a pillowcase over their head with only holes cut out for their eyes. The masked trick-or-treater said, "Trick or treat, give me your money or I'll shoot." Ethel laughed a little, thinking that it was someone they knew playing a joke, maybe even her granddaughter Teresa who had just left. Ethel reached out and tried to pull up the pillowcase, but the person held it down tightly, so she figured that she would play along. She turned around to grab some candy, but the trick-or-treater had moved quickly inside the doorway behind her. By the time Ethel realized what was going on, there was a gun pointed at her. The man ordered Ethel and Martin to the basement to take him to their safe. The couple owned a carpet service business, but they weren't considered wealthy enough to be robbed like this. The Brandlands did have a safe in the basement, but no one outside of close family even knew about it, and it didn't hold millions by any account. Marvin and Ethel had been shuffled to the kitchen on their way towards the basement, but Martin had had enough. He refused to go along further with this prank, and still thinking that it was someone they knew and that this wasn't a real robbery, Marvin grabbed for the gun. The masked man shot Marvin, hitting him in the throat. As the blood splattered across the kitchen, the armed man ripped off his pillowcase, maybe in disbelief that it had come to this. Then he dropped it and ran out of the Brandlands' home. Marvin was transported to the Trinity Regional Hospital and then airlifted to Des Moines for an operation, but he died on the operating table at the age of 69. The murder of her husband and the tragic event she had to live through took its toll on Ethel, and she died not long after her husband's death. When the shooter dropped his pillowcase disguise, Ethel was able to get a good look at him. She said that he was between 16 and 20 years old, around 5'8", with blondish hair and blue eyes. Ethel's description matched with who the family thought had committed the crime. An acquaintance of the family had been bragging about what he had done, and they turned over his name to the police, and even though the description that Ethel gave matched him, they didn't have enough to make an arrest. The case remains unsolved to this day. Today's a great day to start your own podcast. Whether you're looking for a new marketing channel, have a message you want to share with the world, or just think it would be fun to have your own talk show, kind of like mine, podcasting is a great way to expand your reach online. Buzzsprout is hands down the easiest and best way to launch, promote, and track your podcast. Your show can be online and listed in all the major places like Apple, Spotify, and Google just minutes after finishing your recording. Podcasting isn't hard when you have the right partners, and the team at Buzzsprout is passionate about helping you succeed. Join over 100,000 podcasters, and me, already using Buzzsprout to get their message out to the world. Sign up for Buzzsprout today and get a $20 Amazon gift card after your second month. Go to buzzsprout.com to get started. Yun Jong-sung was born in South Korea. When she moved to Virginia in 1995 to live with her aunt and uncle and attend high school, she started going by Cindy Song. She was living in State College, Pennsylvania, and attending Penn State in the fall of 2001. For Halloween, she and a couple close friends dressed up and went to a party at the Players nightclub. Cindy had dressed up as a Playboy bunny. The girls had stayed at the club until 2 a.m., and then they went to an after party at a friend's apartment and played video games. Cindy was dropped off by her friends back at her apartment around 4 a.m. She was never seen again. She made it inside her apartment because her false eyelashes she had worn with her costume were found inside, along with her backpack and cell phone. When investigators went to inspect her apartment after she was reported missing, they didn't see any sign of struggle. The only thing that appeared to be missing was her purse that held her credit cards and license. One could assume she left taking these with her. Her costume wasn't inside, so she must have never changed from it before she left the apartment. No one knows if she went to a close-by 24-hour store or if she left with someone she knew to go somewhere else. Checking her phone, it didn't appear that she made any plans on her cell phone to meet with anyone that night from the lack of calls and text messages. In the days that would pass, there would be no activity on her credit cards. Those who knew her best, her family and friends, all swore that Cindy was not the type of person to take off and not tell someone. That was very uncharacteristic of her, and all of the facts in her apartment indicated that she didn't plan on being gone long. There were two Britney Spears concert tickets for an upcoming show, and she was also having a computer being delivered the day after Halloween. From the state of the apartment and the few items she took with her, authorities believed that Cindy left to go on her own free will that night. She was probably headed to a 24-hour grocery store to pick something up, and she was abducted. The first lead they got was from a witness in Philadelphia's Chinatown district. They had seen a man pushing a woman into a car while she screamed for help. When the witness got close, the man yelled at them to leave. The police have never been able to locate the man that the witness saw or connect his description to Cindy. At this point, they can't say if it was Cindy with him or not. The second lead came from an informant who claimed that he and another man abducted a girl from State College. He described her as Asian and wearing a bunny costume. The informant said that he and Michael Krakowski had taken her and that she was dead and buried. This informant, who had connections to a convicted bank robber, Hugo Selinsky, said that he knew where to find the bodies. Not just of the girl that he and Krakowski had killed, but of other victims, and of Michael himself. The police took him to a property owned by his friend Hugo Selinsky, and he pointed at an area for them to dig. They would unearth five bodies, but through DNA testing, none of them were Cindy Song. But one of them did prove to be Michael, the man who had abducted the State College girl with the informant. And even though the informant said that he was involved in the kidnapping, he claimed he did not kill her. That was Michael who killed her and kept a bunny ear she was wearing as a souvenir. He claimed that Hugo had killed Michael. After not getting a match to Cindy, the investigators questioned the informant more. He said that there were other places throughout the property that the owner, Hugo Selinsky, had used to bury more victims. Police charged Hugo with killing a couple of drug dealers that were found on the property, but he was acquitted. In 2014, seven more bodies were found on the Selinsky property. At that time, the police also announced that Hugo's attorney and a private investigator he had hired were involved in witness intimidation and would be charged. In 2015, Hugo Selinsky was convicted of killing Michael, his fellow killer, and Tammy, who was Hugo's own girlfriend. Both bodies had been unearthed on his property. For these two murders, Hugo was given a life sentence in prison. To this day, Cindy's case is still open, and I couldn't really find anything on if they're still investigating or looking for her, but investigators do seem to believe the informant and that her body is located somewhere on Hugo's property. What would you do with your free time if you didn't have to go grocery shopping? For me, I think about how much of that time I could use to watch Dateline or research a new case for the show, and that's why I use Instacart. Instacart has multiple stores available so you can shop all your favorite stores in a single order. They also highlight deals to help you save money, and all of your groceries are hand-selected by Instacart shoppers based on your preferences, so your produce will always be super fresh and the eggs will be kept safe too. Plus, you can get your groceries right to your door in as little as 1 hour. Try Instacart for your grocery order this week and get free delivery on your first order over $35. Make sure to follow the link in my show notes so they'll know I sent you. Now, back to the show.